was a question he never resolved. By rights, he should have been crouched behind his desk, fingering his keyboard, anxiously reviewing guidance material from London and incomings from neighbouring African missions. Instead of which, he was standing in front of his desk and performing some unidentified vital act, such as straightening the photograph of his wife Gloria and two small sons, perhaps taken last summer while the family was on home leave. The High Commission stood on a slope, and its continuing subsidence was enough to tilt pictures out of true after a weekend on their own. Or perhaps he had been squirting mosquito spray at some Kenyan insect from which even diplomats are not immune. There had been a plague of Nairobi eye a few months back, flies that when squidged and rubbed accidentally on the skin could give you boils and blisters, and even send you blind. He had been spraying, he heard his phone ring. He put the can down on his desk and grabbed the receiver. Also possible, because somewhere in his later memory there was a colour slide of a red tin of insecticide sitting in the out tray on his desk. So, Woodrow here, and the telephone jammed to his ear. Oh, Sandy, it's Mike Mildren. Good morning. You alone by any chance? Shiny, overweight, 24-year-old Mildren, High Commissioner's private secretary. Essex accent, fresh out from England on his first overseas posting, and known to the junior staff, predictably, as Mildred. Yes, Woodrow conceded. He was alone. Why?
Something's come up, I'm afraid, Sandy. I wondered if I might pop down a moment, actually.
Can't it wait till after the meeting?
Well, I don't think it can, really. No, it can't, Mildren replied, gathering conviction as he spoke. It's Tessa Quayle, Sandy.
A different Woodrow now, hackles up, nerves extended. Tessa.
What about her?
He said, his tone deliberately incurious, his mind racing in all directions.
Oh, Tessa, oh Christ, what have you done now?
The Nairobi police say she's been killed, Mildren said, as if he said it every day.
That's a nonsense,
Woodrow snapped back before he had given himself time to think. Don't be ridiculous. Where? When?
At Lake Turkana, the eastern shore, this weekend. They're being diplomatic about the details.
In her car. An unfortunate accident, according to them, he added apologetically. I had a sense they were trying to spare our feelings.
Whose car?
Woodrow demanded wildly. Fighting now, rejecting the whole mad concept. Who, how, where? And his other thoughts and senses forced down, down, down. And all his secret memories of her furiously edited out, to be replaced by the baked moonscape of Turkana, as he recalled it from a field trip 6 months ago, in the unimpeachable company of the military attaché.
Stay where you are, I'm coming up, and don't talk to anyone else, do you hear?
Moving by numbers now, Woodrow replaced the receiver, walked round his desk, picked up his jacket from the back of his chair, and pulled it on, sleeve by sleeve. He would not customarily have put on a jacket to go upstairs. Jackets were not mandatory for Monday meetings, let alone for going to the private office for a chat with chubby Mildren. But the professional in Woodrow was telling him he was facing a long journey. Nevertheless, on his way upstairs, he managed by a sturdy effort of self-will to revert to his first principles whenever a crisis appeared on his horizon, and assure himself, just as he had assured Mildren, that it was a lot of utter nonsense. In support of which, he summoned up the sensational case of a young Englishwoman who had been hacked to pieces in the African bush 10 years ago. It's a sick hoax, of course it is. A replay in somebody's deranged imagination. Some wildcat African policeman stuck out in the desert, half loco on Bangi, trying to bolster the dismal salary he hasn't been paid for 6 months. The newly completed building he was ascending was austere and well designed. He liked its style, perhaps because it corresponded outwardly with his own, with its neatly defined compound, canteen, shop, fuel pump, and clean, muted corridors. It gave off a self-sufficient, rugged impression. Woodrow, to all appearances, had the same sterling qualities. At 40, he was happily married to Gloria, or if he wasn't, he assumed he was the only person to know it. He was head of Chancery. And it was a fair bet that if he played his cards right, he would land his own modest mission on his next posting, and from there advance by less modest missions to a knighthood, a prospect to which he himself attached no importance, of course, but it would be nice for Gloria.